en la producción técnica, la compaginación y la selección musical.
And Rommel Cajavilca in the technical production, edition and music selection.
Manténgase en la sintonía de CKUT, nuestro próximo programa, The International Radio Report.
Stay tuned to CKUT, next, The International Radio Report.
Tengan todos ustedes un feliz domingo.
Have a happy Sunday.
Thomas Witherspoon of Asheville, North Carolina, and you're tuned to the International Radio Report, 30 minutes of news about radio on CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the International Radio Report for February the 28th, 2021. My name's Sheldon. I am here with Jill, and you are listening to CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal. This is our weekly half-hour look at news and information from the world of radio. We invite you to drop us a note via email. radioreport@yahoo.com is our email address. Our show is live streaming or archived at the CKUT website, ckut.ca, and we have a Facebook group for the show. It's called International Radio Report, and we invite you to join the group and add your own material to the page, read the stories that are up there, interact with other listeners to our show. We thank you for joining us here today. We have wrapped up the Winterfest that took place over the weekend. And we'll have a full report on that probably on next week's show. It took place by Zoom, so it was something different this year. We've been telling you all about it leading up to it, so we'll have some more information on that next week for you. We do have a number of stories, though, a little bit more international show today, some stories from around the world, so we may as well get going with them right away. First one, though, is from the United States, and this somebody sent this story to me. I think it's really interesting that we got this story with the audio clip because they know I'm into birds and we're into radio, so it really ties the things together very nicely. Something that I didn't know about whatsoever. I knew about these birds having difficulty with power lines and turbines and, you know, these windmill power sources and things like that. But I was not aware of this situation with the red lights on the towers.
There are more than 100,000 broadcast and cell towers across this country. You use them every time you make a cell phone call or turn on the radio in your car. They're a problem, though, for migrating birds. Every year, millions of birds slam into those towers at night. Ben Thorpe of our member station WCMU reports on a simple way to prevent that.
Likely the only time you really notice one of your neighborhood towers is at night, when they're lit up with conspicuous bright red lights. Those lights help airplane pilots see the huge metal structures that can reach 1,000 feet into the air but can spell disaster for birds.
For example, in 1976, in Gun Lake, Michigan, one tower in one night killed over 2,300 birds.
That's Caleb Putnam. He works for the Michigan Department of Natural Resources and says, for reasons scientists still can't quite figure out, birds kept flying headlong into towers.
If that many are dying at one night at one tower, and yet there are thousands of towers across the country, and as you go across the world, the numbers are staggering.
Putnam says in North America alone, it's estimated that 7 million birds smash into towers every year. But until recently, scientists didn't know why it was happening. Figuring that out became biologist Joelle Gehring's mission. She helped conduct a study in 2003 to find out what could be done.
I can't not look at the ground when I'm underneath these towers.
It's an unusually warm January morning, and the farm fields surrounding this tower are oozing mud. Gehring is standing at a broadcast tower in rural northeast Michigan that belongs to the local radio station. Gehring says every morning in the spring or fall, the peak migration season, she and others had the unpleasant job of counting dead birds at the base of these towers. What she discovered was surprising.
So we were able to reduce the numbers of bird fatalities on communications towers by simply extinguishing those non-flashing lights. And those fatalities were reduced by as much as 70%.
You heard that right. Simply turning off the steady beam lights on towers reduced bird fatalities by 70%. Exactly why isn't yet clear, but she has a theory.
Some research has documented that when birds are exposed to long wavelengths of light, such as red or white, that it actually interferes with their ability to use magnetic fields for navigation.
Joel Gehring says that's especially true on cloudy nights when birds can't navigate by the stars. The tower's steady red lights seem to confuse them. Flashing red lights don't. In 2015, the Federal Aviation Administration changed regulations on new towers, requiring they all be built with only flashing lights. Gehring, who now works for the Federal Communications Commission, spends much of her time contacting people who run towers built before 2015, encouraging them to switch to blinking lights.
And when we drive back and forth around those beautiful Great Lakes at night, we see more and more communications towers that are lit with only flashing lights at night. And my son always points out, another bird-friendly tower, Mom.
There are still tens of thousands of towers, though, that aren't bird-friendly, as birds are drawn to the solid red lights. Gehring and others will continue to try to save those birds by doing one simple thing, changing those tower lights. For NPR News, I'm Ben Thorpe.
I think what's interesting in this story is the fact that you know, first of all, I had no idea about, you know, how the lights kind of mess up their direction finding, if you want. I listened to this story and the first thing I thought was, well, now I'm going to look at towers if they have blinking lights or not.
I don't know. This story, of course, was based in the United States. And I know some of the groups that I'm involved in, we look at buildings, and the lights that are on buildings are cause a lot of bird deaths as birds hit these buildings. They're distorted by the light, whatever, in some of the buildings. It's actually encouraged to turn lights off in buildings overnight. But this thing with the towers, the fact that they're affected by a constant red light, but not by a flashing red light, I thought was really interesting.
Yep, absolutely. And I was listening to the story, and the first thing I thought was, oh, maybe there's a different color we could use for the lights or something. Then again, also what's interesting, blinking lights actually attract much more your attention, I think, than a steady light. So even for aircraft and everything, I think it's a good thing, because I think a blinking light will attract the attention of pilots much more than just a steady light. It's interesting, because in everything we build, we don't know what the effect it has on nature and on birds and wildlife. And we learn after a certain time. And I think it's cool that they found some way of making this better.
Yeah, and we don't know for sure if this is like a legal issue now. It's almost more of a recommendation, yeah. I think, than anything else, that if you're putting up a new tower, I think in new towers it is a regulation, though, that they do have to install flashing lights on new towers. But on existing towers, I don't think it's a retroactive thing. They're just encouraging people that if you have to replace your lights for some reason, or if you want to replace them, to replace them with flashing lights. So, you know, we certainly have a lot more towers around now than we ever have before.
Oh, yeah.
with all types of, it's not just radio towers, but communications towers. And, you know, you look at some of the stations we have in Montreal here, AM stations, it's a very large, complex, multi-tower installation. So, you know, you're getting almost a full field across you in front of your vision of all these different towers. So I guess maybe the different lighting flashing at different timing and that too might be of assistance to the birds flying through, particularly during migration period when you're getting large numbers of birds going through. So that's a pretty neat story. And course, NPR always does great stories, you know, very in-depth studies, reports on things like this. So we thought we'd just run the audio on that one and see what you thought of it. So a pretty interesting story.
Absolutely.
So next we go, we said it's international. So let's go over to Poland and something's happening over there.
Yep, and Poland's radio stations are opposing a plan that would ask them to actually make half of their content Polish. This is by China Global Television Network via Radio World. More than 200 Polish radio stations, nearly 70% of the country's radio broadcasters, have called on the government to abandon plans to make them present almost half of their airtime content in the Polish language. the new law, part of the fiercely contested package of broader media advertising reforms set to come in on July 1st, would require at least 49% of their content, including music, to be in Polish, up from the 33%. In an open letter to the government, the broadcasters stated the legislation would harm Poland's domestic music industry rather than promote it, saying it would have catastrophic consequences. Poland already has the highest quota for national language radio broadcasting in Europe after France, where the figure is 40%. However, the government hopes the new law will offset the domination of English language music in the country, where, according to the National Broadcasting Council, Polish language songs only make up around 40% of music across Polish airwaves in 2019. But the broadcasters say that if the law comes in effect, they would be forced to slash their budgets, which would eventually trickle down to hurt Polish artists. The 202 signatories of the letter sent to Poland's culture minister and the prime minister's office included the CEOs of Euroset, Time, Agora, and RMF, the largest private radio groups in Poland. The main complaint, according to the Poland's Radio Research Committee, is that the proposed changes would benefit global online streaming platforms such as Spotify and Apple Music. Essentially, if the radio stations can't provide the music Polish people want, they say listeners will turn elsewhere, which could cut large holes in their advertising revenues. Surveys show that Polish songs account for 10 to 20% of listeners' favorites. I look at this story, and I mean, this story is a pretty big story in terms of what is happening with the language barrier. We could see that the language barrier is much of a problem in music and in what's happening overall with the dominance of English. Online services is also a big problem because they don't have any regulation with all of this. And that is something to think about.
Yeah, that's part of the problem. And I think, you know, this is something that we don't often think about. You know, of course, here we have English and French, but in so many places where you have one predominant language, you don't often think of what's going off on the radio. And as you said, there's so much saturation of international music, which is predominantly English. You don't think of countries where, you know, English is not a prime first language. What about the artists that try to make a living in their own language? If their stations are not going to play their music, it's kind of like when they started Canadian content in Canada. We had a lot of artists that were struggling and nobody would ever hear them because nobody was going to play them, not even here in Canada. But Canadian content really worked well. And, you know, we began to get international stars coming from Canada. Just think of how many times you hear of an international star from Poland. It just doesn't happen. So I think this is why they would like to get more exposure for them on the radio. But, you know, the broadcasters just don't want to do that. So, and it's not what their audience wants.
No. And just look at an example. I have YouTube Music here and I play my songs. I do have a certain amount of French language songs that I like. There are Francophone artists I want to listen to. But overall, I listen a lot more to the English side. So, you know, there's a dominance there. When YouTube Music tells me, hey, I'm going to, you know, send you songs that you might like, there's not one single Francophone song in there. It's all English language stuff.
Right.
And radio stations have to compete with that. Because more and more, where do we consume our music? We consume it online. And that is a big competition to beat. And then you have regulations that we need. We do need regulation. But it also can hurt if it's too aggressive, I think.
Yeah, and if you're going up, like you said, against the online services, you know, there's you can pick whatever you want. You can, yep. You know, there's no regulation, as you said. So it's a difficult situation, but I guess I can understand why they're trying to do it. And certainly the musicians that are, you know, trying to get heard and absolutely. Trying to make a living need laws like that to be in place. So I mean, anyways, we'll see. Yep. We'll see what happens with that.
Absolutely.
We move next to Great Britain, and this is some ham radio news. Another impact of COVID in the pandemic. Online exams boost ham radio numbers in the United Kingdom. This is from the Radio Society of Great Britain via the Southgate Radio News. The RSGB has released the statistics for the UK amateur radio exams that were held in 2020. The figures released cover the whole of 2020 for both in-person and online exams. Due to the pandemic, in-person exams were only held during the first 10 weeks of the year, and there weren't that many of them. Online basic exams that people can do from home started in mid-April, but the online intermediate exams weren't available until August. Full exams didn't get underway until the end of October. No exams were held in the last 2 weeks of December. So we see the numbers. The basic exam, 3,087 candidates with 2,774 people passing. Intermediate, 868 candidates, 759 of them passed. And the full privileges, 378 candidates, 258 of them who passed the exams. Note the exam candidate figures are for exams booked. There were a number of no-shows, as circumstances can mean not everyone is able to sit their exam on the day booked. The number of people passing foundation or basic service in 2020 was doubled that of 2019. This number of newcomers is a return to levels last seen in 2002. The figures for the full exam are especially pleasing to see. While free online training courses have been available for foundation and intermediate, there were no training courses available for the full exam, so candidates had to rely on just self-study for the full training manual. Although the online full exam was only available for about 7 weeks of the year, the numbers passing were two-thirds of the entire total for 2019. So a lot of people decided now's a good time to do it, I guess. The services were available online. People took advantage of that. And so I guess British ham radio is doing well. We'll see how active all of those people are that got yeah. their licenses to see the different levels of interest. Obviously, the basic privileges gaining the most attraction, but pretty healthy numbers in the other categories as well.
I think it's a good idea because so a lot of people have been asking me to pass my ham mm-hmm. exam for a long time. And now I actually have subscribed for April. So I'm supposed to have the course and the exam in April for my ham license. And what made me do it is the fact that it's virtual online, which makes it a lot easier for me to actually go through all of the course and the exam itself. It's something to think, even for the future after the pandemic, that maybe it's not a bad idea. And I noticed here, locally at least, that a lot of those clubs that now want you to have the course and the exam are often out of big cities. Like in Montreal, there's not a lot of them that actually do things in Montreal. Often you look at, you know, where do I have to go for the class? It's like, oh, it's outside the city. If you don't have a car, it could be a problem. This makes it easy for anybody, anywhere, wherever you live, even in places where you may have a lot of difficulty, you know, getting into a class for your exam.
Yep, I think it's a sign of the times to come.
Yep,
and you know, one of those things that's probably going to be impacted by the COVID situation, and we'll probably see changes coming across the board. For absolutely. Things like this.
So what did the Sun do this week? Well, it surprised us, first of all. Last week we had talked about a fast-moving solar wind that actually has arrived faster than the actual date that we talked about. It was supposed to arrive during the day of the show last week, around the 21st. Arrived on Saturday, a day early. And it actually did a lot of problems on the bands were really, really messed up. And there were some G1 storms that were happening with a lot of auroras. So for a few days, shortwave was a difficult task this week. Then it quieted down, and now we're moving into another wind stream that might be arriving. So on March 1st or 2nd, there's a solar wind from a coronal hole that might actually reach Earth. So this might actually do a little bit of unsettled conditions. As we're recording the show, the K index is 3, which is quiet, but almost to the unsettled threshold. There are a couple of sunspots on the sun, 2804, 2805. 2804 is interesting because it doubled in size in 24 hours, so it's looking good for staying on the solar disk for a couple of days. Solar flux hovering around 80 right now, so the beginning of the week might be a little bit rough. But overall, conditions might be interesting. Let's hope that things quiet down. And of course, take that radio, turn it on, tune the bands, and see what's out there.
For the latest news from the world of radio every Sunday morning at 10:30 on the International Radio Report on CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal and online at CKUT.ca.
We have another ham radio related story. This time we are going off to Germany. And this is an interesting story. I'd like to see this happening in a lot of other countries too, including ours.
And when you read a story like this, especially where I live in a high noise environment, I wish that this happens, of course, in our neck of the woods. German radio hams tackling RF noise pollution. This is via the Southgate Amateur Radio News. DARC, the Deutsche Amateur Radio Club, reports 35 electrical noise area monitoring systems have been delivered, and another 20 locations are sought as part of the effort to monitor the interference from human-made noise on the HF bands. These systems, based on nationwide installations or measuring stations that work as a network with the help, the DARC can make scientifically reliable statements about interference levels on the frequencies. As is well known, the interference has increased in recent years as various consumer devices drive up the noise level. So these projects are funded by the DARC Membership Pro in 2018. And basically, this is a good idea because I don't think nobody really knows at what extent the noise is a huge problem in our hobby today, on every, especially on the HF and the low part of the frequency spectrum, but everywhere in general. I mean, all the devices we buy today are noise makers, basically. And having measuring stations that actually can tell you the level of noise and maybe even monitor over time the slow increase, because it's not over, it's increasing constantly, is a great idea. And let's hope that this measuring of the noise, the HF noise around you, has also an effect in maybe having some regulation or some way of tackling the noise.
It's a combination, too, of the amount of devices, as you said, but the yep. lowering of standards as
oh, yeah.
well on
Absolutely.
The amount of interference that different devices can create. They've certainly kind of lowered the bar on the regulations.
Absolutely.
And I think it's come down to a numbers game. You know, you have these masses of people, particularly in large population centers, with all these different kinds of devices. And, you know, they're looking for cheaper ways to make many of these things. So they're cutting a lot of corners. The standards organizations are looking at this and saying, well, you know, those people listening to the radio, well, they're not maybe as important as they think they are. So we're letting some of this stuff that generates a lot of noise go ahead. And then there's some other things that they probably, you know, that get created that nobody even realizes the interference that they're calling. It may only be radio people like us who
Yeah.
You know, we're tuning across the bands and we hear all these weird things. The people that are using these devices probably have no knowledge whatsoever of what these things create out there on the spectrum.
There's the fact also that a lot of devices we get today that we use, a long time ago, electronic devices had to, almost everything that was sold had to go through testing, had to go through all sorts of, you know, the regulations and follow rules. And then we have the internet where we buy everything from everywhere around the world. And those rules are just gone. You buy a device from China that doesn't set, you know, doesn't actually have any standards of any kind or follow any rules from your own country, but you're still getting that device delivered to you.
Yeah, a lot of these products are going direct from manufacturer direct to the consumer.
Yep.
There's no middleman that's sort of looking at the product and analyzing it and seeing if it passes regulations to be permitted to be sold in your own country.
Yep.
So, you know, that's another byproduct of the internet, as you said. So more and more of this type of problem is going to rise, I think, as we go along. So to see the Germans, the ham clubs, doing something like this is pretty unique. Now, what are they going to do about the results that are found? Yeah, that's another question.
Yep.
You know, we'll have to wait and see.
So we have upcoming ham contests.
Yeah, there are. There's a few coming up for next weekend. Not a lot, but they're kind of interesting ones. The first one is the ARRL International DX Contest. It's a single sideband contest, 0100 Zulu March 6th to 2359 Zulu March 7th, sponsored by the ARRL. And it is to encourage Canadian and U.S. stations to expand their knowledge of DX propagation on the HF and MF bands, improve operating skills, and improve station capability by creating a competition in which DX stations may only contact U.S. and Canadian stations. There is a CW portion of this contest that already took place. This is the SSB one. It's using 160, 80, 40, 20, 15, and 10 meters. We'll post up the link to where you can get all the details about the contest. So that's a pretty big one. There should be a lot of activity for that one.
Wake Up is the Wake Up QRP Sprint, 0600 Zulu to 0800 Zulu on March 6th, sponsored by the Russian QRP Club. QRP is low powered, so these stations are really low powered. Participants, all licensed amateurs, power no more than 5 watts output, and it's 40 and 20 meters near the QRP frequencies, and that is in CW, Morse code.
And we have a contest coming out of Ukraine. It's the Open Ukraine RTTY Championship, 1800 Zulu March 6th to 1359 Zulu March 7th. It's in two parts. There's a low band section, which is 1800 to 2059, and the second is 2100 to 2359. The high bands part is in two rounds as well, 800 to 1059 UTC and 1100 to 1359 UTC. The low bands mean 1.8, 3.5, and 7 megahertz. The high bands 7, 14, 21, and 28 megahertz. And operations should keep in digimodes subbands, and the RTTY is 45 baud.
There's the SARL Hamnet 40 meter simulated emergency contest. That will be going on from 12 to 14 UTC on March 7th, sponsored by the South African Radio League. The SSB contest is open to all radio amateurs in South Africa, Namibia, Botswana, Zimbabwe, Swaziland, Mozambique, Lesotho, and Marianne Islands in South African Antarctica. Only contacts with these areas will count. Frequencies, it is a phone contest, and the band segments of 7063 to 7100 and 7130 to 7200 kilohertz.
So it's pretty narrow range on that one,
yep,
but a lot of interesting countries. Boy, if you get good propagation, you might be hearing some countries you don't hear very often on the ham bands.
Yep, so. Absolutely.
Interesting contest. So that's all. We'll put the links up to all of those contests as usual on our Facebook page, which you can find at International Radio Report on Facebook. And I guess we're done.
Pretty much.
That is going to be it for this week. We thank you for joining us. Tune in next week. We'll have some information on what took place at Winterfest this year. Besides that, drop us a note, radioreport@yahoo.com, and tune us in next week for the next edition of the International Radio Report on CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal. Have a great week, everybody. Bye-bye for now.
Bye-bye.
You are tuned to Radio Denmark, Shortwave Department, Copenhagen, Denmark.
The alert level in your region or a neighboring region is red. To curb the spread of COVID-19, gatherings with family and friends are prohibited, and travel between regions should be avoided. In red zones, it's also forbidden to leave your home between 8 p.m. and 5 a.m. Visit quebec.ca/coronavirus to learn more about the specific measures addressing the situation. Follow all the rules, all the time, no exceptions. A message from the Gouvernement du Québec.
I'm making you your favorite meal. It's the least I can do after an entire week of taking away your phone, going through your messages, calling you names, insulting your friends, and shouting at you. Yeah, tonight, I'm making you your favorite meal so I can start another week of taking away your phone, going through your messages, calling you names, insulting your...
Violence against women stops here. Contact SOS Violence Conjugale. A message from the Gouvernement du Québec.
Hi, I'm David Suzuki, and you're listening to CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal. Information to grow the brain.
Don't